You're listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Visit decentered.co.uk or follow on Instagram and Twitter at Decentered Media. Hello, it's Thursday the 26th of March and I'm Rob Watson and this is a Decentered Media podcast and I'm joined today by...
Shumaila Jaffrey.
Hooray! So we've had a busy couple of weeks and we're going to spend a bit of time reflecting on your visit to Leicester and what you've learned and what you'll take away. Do you want to summarise quickly what you have been doing and what your first impressions were when you came to Leicester?
So I've been very busy and the past 11 weeks since I have arrived in this city, I haven't taken a single off day. Either I've been talking to someone, meeting someone, or visiting some place. So I've tried to use every single moment of the opportunity that I was afforded, and I thought I'm so privileged. And it has been amazing, because when I was coming here as an international student, somebody who has never been to Leicester before, who had never been to Leicester before, and still doing a PhD project on the city, I had my fears. And I was like, you know, anything, I mean, it happens with everyone every time when you are starting something new. And my fear was that would I be able to connect to the people of Leicester? And I think that I have been able to record almost 30 interviews. I have attended, you know, several events in the city. And now, I mean, after 11 weeks, I enter a hall, you know, an event in Leicester, and I meet like 10, 11 people who know me. So I think it has been great.
And they greet you, they don't avoid you. Yes. I know people when I go to halls and they avoid me. No, I'm joking.
So, And they tell me, and I've been listening, you know, Leicester has adopted you. Or why don't you move to Leicester? There is a lot of work. We can do a lot of projects together. So, yes, amazing.
So what was the reason for you to come here? And let's kind of reflect on what the expectation was and what the kind of reality was of what you found. So what was your research project?
So I came here. I think that it's really important to mention that I am a PhD student, a researcher. My research is about the 2022 unrest in Leicester, and I am looking into the media aspect of it, that what was happening in the media space. And my project is funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council, and it's a wonderful studentship. It's a great program. The way they have developed it, they tell you that, okay, you do the PhD, that's the main thing, but at the same time they want you to do so many different things. So at the end of the program, mostly students are ready to, you know, instantly kind of join the market, you know, become part of the economy. And there are, you know, little kind of parts of funding available where they encourage you to take on different activities. So one part of the studentship is the research employability project. So where they encourage students to go and work with an organization, which is not kind of directly part of their research, but something that would be beneficial for their project, but give them also some skills about employability. So for me, I'm a former BBC journalist. I have a long career behind me. For me, of course, the new thing that I learned was that I worked with Decentered Media. It's a community media setup. So I did not have any prior experience of working in a community media setup. So that was something new for me. And I think that it was also, met wonderful people, and you know, at grassroots level where you connected to people in small little tiny communities. So that was something that I enjoyed a lot, but that was something new for me. But otherwise, in terms of employability skills, I mean, I have some employability skills. I've worked for a long time. So I thought, you know, I will use this opportunity to connect to people, because we believe in that you should do research, not on communities, but with them. So, you know, that respect of where you connect to people, try to understand them and their perspectives. And I spent most of my time doing that. So I worked with decentered media, but also I was meeting people, talking to them, listening to them. I did a lot of listening. And I think that this opportunity will, I think, hugely benefit my PhD project. It has enriched me as a professional and as a researcher. And I'm very thankful for this opportunity. And there is a very small team, ROCA team, that manages this studentship. Just 3-4 people. And sometimes, and they tell you the same information. It's a lot of information. You don't kind of register all of it. You keep going back to them for small little things that they have already told you, but they are very patient. And for me, as an international student, to be able to get this opportunity to be here, to do this research, and somebody has paid for me to come and stay in Leicester for three months, I can't tell you how kind of grateful I am, because I come from, I'm from Pakistan, a middle-aged kind of woman. I never thought, I mean, in my country, there was no such opportunity. Of course, it is highly competitive. It's based on merit. I had to work really, really hard for it. I earned it. And for international students, it's even harder. But I still feel I'm so privileged and I'm so grateful. And that's why I always feel, when I talk about my research, I want my research to be impact-oriented. I want to create knowledge with that, you know, people who have funded my research can use that knowledge to fix something in their country, in their society.
Well, we're grateful that you've, when I say we, I mean I am grateful that you've experienced something in a positive way, because that's, in a way, that's the heart of what decentered media is about, is that participatory empowerment. And it can happen at all levels. So it's one of the things that you know, it's very different for people, media professionals, and it's been interesting listening to your reflections about your experience as a professional journalist about the participatory route. And it's one of the things, when we're thinking about media policy and reform in the UK, the BBC's job, and it's been discussed as part of the charter renewal, is not to train the public up to become competent media producers themselves. There's a separation between the public and the institution, whereas community media, it's exactly what its role is about, experiencing and being part of. So what kind of, when you list this set of skills on your CV that you've hopefully acquired, what would you want people to value or recognize about that experience that has added to your skills mix?
I think I now view community media and the utility of it, and it's, you know, the role of community media from a changed lens. I always knew it was important, but in a city like Leicester, which is so diverse, I now understand, and I am researching the 2022 unrest, and there was recently this SOAS led independent inquiry, and it talks about the role of media, but what it hasn't talked about, you know, the absence, you know, we talk about absences, not just presences.
How do you prove an absence?
Absence. So the absence, I think, and of course I understand it was not, I think none of the team members had media and communication background, and I'm a media and communication researcher. So I think the absence of the, a community strong, community-based local media entity, I think that was absent. And I've been talking to different people, And of course, it's just, you know, second year of research. I'm just finishing my data collection. But whatever knowledge that I've gathered and my understanding, my own understanding, I feel that if a strong, neutral, Leicester-based media entity would have been around, I think it could have maybe minimized the harm, which at one point in the past used to be Leicester Mercury, but now we are living in a different world. It's more digital, and Leicester Mercury it's a different model. The BBC, everybody complains about the BBC. There are trust issues, but also cuts and this also I understood that the BBC cannot be a replacement of community media.
And vice versa.
The community media cannot be the BBC. So I think all my concepts about community media, I think they have changed. I learned a lot about how important it is for community, and especially if you are living in a city which is so diverse, and if people would have different streams of information, which is the case, unfortunately, not just in Leicester, everybody, everywhere in the world, you are living in different bubbles, information bubbles, and then there is always this threat that anything can go wrong, and there can be influences, there can be vested interests, there can be transnational influences. So the strong community media can be a good defense against that kind of threats or manipulation.
In terms of the, I want to go back to the kind of structural and strategic thinking about this, but I want to maybe focus for a minute on the interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. And I feel, from my perspective as well, there was a little bit of kind of, when you first arrived, offloading. That's what the researcher often gets. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pent-up anxiety, frustration, history from different people across the spectrum, all seeing these things from different perspectives and not being able to have a way to work through some of the difficult issues that, you know, whether it's functional issues, whether it's perception issues, whether it's whatever kind of issues they are. And what was it like when you first started to engage with people? And, you know, we've got, the different media groups, community media groups that we've got, you know, like the Evington Echo, like, you know, Saw Sound or whatever, you know, whichever groups you've dealt with, and there's a range of them. What was that like? How did you feel at that point?
I thought that this is, you see, it's not a very rewarding job. It's like, it's not a career even, right? So people who are engaged with or contributing to community media, mostly they are driven by their own just commitment to the community or to the place where they're living. So I met Harkesh. Harkesh is a community reporter for Evington Echo. And he's basically a translator, and he earns his living like doing different jobs. Journalism or community journalism or whatever he does for Evington Echo is not his source of income, but he's so passionate about it, and he keeps contributing to the local publication. And I felt that really fascinating. And I have a lot of respect for Harkesh, because not many people are, everybody's busy, life is so busy. So, you know, if somebody is taking that pain where they are covering different events, going to different places, and then taking out time to write something and produce something and post something, and then Helen herself, you know, she's so old, and she's so inspirational. She doesn't need anything now. She can just retire and have a comfortable life. She's doing that work, and then it's all almost like, you know, mostly people who are working in community media, they're almost like ideological, like almost
fanatical.
So that also I found quite fascinating. But you need that drive, that passion, that, you know, something immaterial, I would say, to, you know, work in community media. So there should be more support. There should be more financial incentives. And I think with this whole kind of thing of with social media and hate and polarization, I think a stronger community media can provide some level of information resilience against manipulation or hate agendas or whatever you would like to call them.
It's one of the things that's difficult to write up. I mean, it's the respect or the acknowledgement of the privileged position of the researcher. And it opens doors, but it also puts you on a pedestal, and you've got some responsibility when you're working with people to make sure that you, as we say, don't lead them up the garden path. However, the other side of it is that when you've gained people's trust and acceptance, that the doors are opened and you see things, and that's why the observation is so important, of going to events. And we did the International Language Day. And that was, not very well attended by visitors, but we had a really good time by the people who came, having some detailed conversations. What would be, in the way that you think, you've got to think about how you account for those experiences. Can you separate out the function from the sense of belonging that is drawn through these things? Is that thing when you're working in community situations, what we call, loosely, I use the word community less and less these days, it becomes too almost kind of problematic to use, but when you're working in those situations where you've got groups of people who come together to commune, there is a joy there is a connection there when it works, which is hard to describe and account for in itself, but you've also got to step back from it and look at it in a kind of contextual, historical, political kind of lens as well, to say, hang on a minute, this is part of a wider process or situation. How do you think you'll approach reflecting on that before you start your write-up? How do you think that you'll chew this over?
So you see, I've seen things changing in Desta since I've arrived. So when I came and I initially attended a couple of...
I think that's a lot to do with the weather, because you came in January and now it's spring, so it makes a big difference.
I think it has something to do with the report, with the SOAS-led report. I understand that, it's not perfect, and there would never be consensus that, that, 100% or a majority of people would agree on something. But when I came and I attended a couple of community events, and I felt that people would come together, but there was this heaviness. There was this heaviness as if there is an elephant in the room and nobody wants to address that. And with this report, not everybody liked it. I think at least there is some kind of, people have got closure. Of course, there are people who are still waiting for the government inquiry to be released. But at least people have got something, a document. And now they're asking, what next, what next? And whatever you say, at least there is now kind of some understanding of what happened at that time. Because I've been talking to people, and local people did not know what was happening. Some people even came to know about the unrest, the next day through media, living in this city. I, as a researcher, I could see that it was building up from like a few years, even, I can say that. So now at least they've got a bigger picture. They know that these are the things, they have been established. Okay, we don't agree with the 10 out of 10, but maybe two, things the reporter is pointing out they are correct. So there is now a movement, okay, what's next? So I think, you know, whether it's the political arena or it's media or it's social cohesion, people are thinking about new projects, okay, what can we do so it does not happen again? And then during Ramadan, I was here and I attended, you know, again, I feel privileged that I was invited and I got the opportunity to attend the interfaith iftar, which was, you know, it happened on the same Belgrave Road where the, you know, one of the most ugliest pictures of the unrest, you know, which was beamed all over the world, you know, came out from that, you know, same road. So it happened and it is considered a Hindu kind of dominant area. So this iftar, where all communities of Leicester, they came together, they broke bread together. The atmosphere, the symbolism of that, you know, I was there. And so initially it was like, you know, religious ceremony, you know, there were like prayers. And then when food came, how people were like talking to each other, people were hugging each other, they were like conversations. It was, and it felt like big Desi wedding where, you know, everybody's like having loads of food and they are talking and hugging and standing and sitting. And it was like a big kind of living room. And I felt really kind of, I saw that, you know, the warmth. So that kind of, for me, was like, you know, I'm a researcher, an outsider, but even being an outsider, you know, it warmed my heart to be there that evening. So I think for me, I'm trained as a BBC journalist. So there is, you know, there is a system in my kind of brain where you just switch off your own. So I'm very aware of my own positionality. When I was coming here, I was very aware of my own positionality. That's why I had some fears that, you know, whether people would talk to me or not, whether they would trust me or not. I have a big baggage of my journalism, of my own identity. But I think that when I will start writing about things, there is a process in my brain.
You give me an interesting thought there, because actually one of the things when you come to Leicester, and I feel this myself when I visit elsewhere and then come back, is like, get over yourself. You're not important. There's so much going on. It's like kind of your positionality doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. And that's, you know, that's like glass half full, half empty. It's sometimes it's important and then sometimes it just doesn't matter.
You're not too important.
And there's that element too, which kind of actually is quite grounding in a way.
No.
I wanted to ask you, which is related to that, which is the idea of, as a professional journalist, and again, you know, you're processing the reflections and your field notes and everything and your observations, but are there any things that you would think about that would, in terms of about the journalistic process, not the product, you know, not the occurrences itself and people's reaction to, but about the journalistic process that you think need to be dealt with? Is there an urgency that we need to review how, you know, the large media organisations, just from a kind of professional journalism management process? Is there anything that you've kind of would jump out at this point where you could say, look, this is something which is going to have to be dealt with? Or, I mean, is it too early for you to come up with any kind of conclusions like that? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's a leading question, obviously. But it's, you know, are there any reflections that you'd want to pass on to colleagues in professional journalism?
Mm. So I was, but I interviewed, you know, a lot of people. And I would ask them about Leicester's media landscape, because I'm interested in it. Leicester is like, and so many other cities in the world are now, you know, diverse. And so what's true for Leicester, it can be replicated, you know, in other parts of the world as well. So I was very interested, and I would ask them about, you know, what kind of media do you have? How do you get your news? And do different communities get news from the same news source, or are there different news streams? So I think at the moment the challenge is the same, you know, the social media, and Leicester has a lot of diaspora population, and the diaspora population is especially the younger, the older generation, and new migrants. They are very much attuned to consuming news and current affairs, using sources from back home or country of origin. And then another thing that kind of jumped out to me was representation. So I could not find any Muslim journalist. And this is the city where I think at the moment Muslims are the kind of biggest population group in terms of religion. And so it took me some time, and I came to know that there was this one woman journalist. Now she's working from BBC Nottingham, and then there's another one, but she's a freelancer. She's not a full-time journalist. I could not find a male journalist in mainstream media. So that was kind of a little bit eye-opening for me. Then Lester Mercury, I mean, it has become a shadow of what it used to be. A very small team, but then it is all again white. And ITV has... It seems that they get it. It's not just, you know, to check boxes that you need to have certain, you know, number of people. But at the same time, if you want to understand the stories of those communities, I think then representation matters. And I was told again and again that the mainstream media, the national media, the international media did not get the story of the 2022 Leicester riots right. But then there wasn't a strong kind of local media that could have told that story more effectively. That wasn't there. The BBC has been gutted of its resources partly because of cuts or policies, or I don't know. It's a very complicated debate. Yeah, but the BBC Leicester was not in that position. So I've been told that the BBC was far behind. They were cautious. I understand somebody who has been part of the BBC that even when they deploy people, if there is some violence going on, so they always think about, you know, if you are going to send the people, are they HIFAT, you know, trained or not? Or but even otherwise, as a national broadcaster, it was such a sensitive story. They did not want to incite something. So it is a different role that they play.
The general policy for BBC local radio in England, it was never described, and they've resisted in their press statement that it was a cut. It was always described as a redeployment of resources to a regional digital first, and that it was expected. I mean, the 22 events took place just before the policy was changed, but the follow-on has happened subsequently. But they I'm not speaking for the BBC, but it's not an issue of cuts. It's an issue of reprioritisation, and I think it exposes. I know we lots of people have talked about this nationally, and challenged Ofcom on this as well and DCMS, the government, on this, is that it exposes a failure in terms of the BBC model, which claims to improve journalism and relevance of those stories because they're in a more, you know, it's like the health service having a team of heart surgeons, and you've got a group who work in a specialist unit and they can provide better service, but then they've lost that dispersal within the places where you're losing your general practitioners, if you like. So it's like a balance between the two, and it's tipped too far towards centralisation.
When it started happening, I was part of the BBC, and I think the main idea was to kind of, you know, cut duplication again because of funding and because of, you know, to save resources. I think internationally, for international deployments, you know, they have language services. So probably that model would have worked. But centralization of planning and commissioning for local communities, for cities like Leicester, I don't think that it has. I mean, this is the feedback that I've got from people. It's not my personal opinion. But it seems that, you know, based on what I've been talking to and hearing from people, people feel that the BBC has become more distant. So the 2022 unrest, they've thought the BBC was, you know, far behind. And whatever they did, they don't question that they said, okay, that was fine, but it was delayed and it was too little and too late. you know, that kind of stuff. But then I think, so, you know, to sum up, you asked me. So I think there needs to be more, again, we come back to the strong, local, reliable, trusted media source, which is respected and accessible to and representative of all communities in Leicester. So people stop living in their bubbles. But then it is also important to educate people about, you know, so media literacy is, I think, so integral to, it's not that you can just, you know, keep putting money in different media ventures, including community media, but then people don't use them. So it's also very important that media literacy also go hand in hand with wherever, you know, if there is any investment, wherever you want to do some kind of work, then people should also be educated about that this is important, this is your local source, and you should get your news from here.
And it's part of that. One of my concerns is, I always say, you know, it's all very well having, if you like, ideological, political or policy concerns, but at some point you've got to roll your sleeves up and get involved.
Yeah.
And learning by doing is the most, you know, it's the participatory form that drives lasting change. And if for media, in a way, is if you are a, so the community reporters model that we've developed through various practices of decentred media, it's hard to get people to fund and support that and engage with that, because it's seen as, it's media, you know, it's like that's done by professionals, or it's social media, that's done by people, you know, relaxing on their phones in front of the TV or something. And the centre ground, the centre part of this, where you are embedded in a place, part of a network or a group of people or a community, and you're actually in practice learning how to tell and share stories responsibly and accountably so that people can trust them. And I it's the thing, I think in the SOAS report, it was that, how do you prove an absence? So yes. Either we've been doing community media in Leicester responsibly, but I think one of the challenges is that we don't do journalism. We may be asking too much of community media in that respect, but given the resources that we've got, but it's maybe we've been too responsible and we didn't look at these issues and try and air them in a way that kind of explored them more. We kind of held cautiously to the, so we didn't cause any ripples on the surface of the pond, if you like. It was just smooth, so therefore people then looked at it and they looked elsewhere. They saw the ripples in the pond in the international media, national and international media, and in the social media, but not in the local community media environment, because that didn't, it was placid, and so therefore there was, nobody's attention was drawn to it. It's like when you've got, I suppose the image comes to mind, you've got three children. One of them's very, very effusively adoring of their parents. You get children like this. I was never like that. And you get children who are very naughty and, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries all the time. And the middle one is kind of left alone and they don't bother anybody. And they're the one that you've got to watch out for. You know, it's like they're the one. You can see the others. The others are visible. Yeah. But the one that you don't see, and it's a little bit like that, you know, with our community media, we've kind of, because if you've acted responsibly, it's seeing it from one perspective, actually we've done our job properly. But because we're not pushing it as far as we can, because we've not got the capacity and the resources to do that, it's kind of just, you know, the child who's sitting in the corner reading a book or playing their phone or something.
So that's where the gap is. And I think this is the challenge, that how you bring people back to and make them interested in place-based media, which is, which is based on their civic identity instead of, you know, ethnic identity or religious identity. That's fine. People can consume material from wherever they want to. But if there is something local happening, they should know what is happening around them. They should participate in the civic life, you know, buses and roads and schools and that kind of stuff. And also, if if it is about some community in their city, they should not tune into a foreign channel to get that information. And if and I mean, people are not even tuning into, it's coming on their phone. So before believing the information which is coming from a from another country, why?
That's a really important question to unpick, because there's a real benefit. I mean, what an age that we live in, that you've got globalized media. We often we get scared of the prospect and we kind of pull back and people say, oh, you know, we need to control this. And it's like, no, it can be an open system. We want an open system, but there's teething problems about how we deal with this. And if somebody's first port of call is a clearly motivated and antagonistic news platform from somewhere else in the world, that you've got, you can't look at the verification of that, but you can access it. And if it's that, if that's your first port of call for your news and information, you've kind of got to take responsibility yourself about that. But if there's no local alternatives that people can turn to and go, you know what, it might be the world's most boring station, but when there's a problem in Leicester, I listen to this station.
Yeah.
That used to be the BBC, and I think it's less, you know, that's the I've described it in the past, and I've said this in the BBC should hang its head in shame about its role in locally, because that its job is to serve the citizens of the UK and the people who live here. And if there's problems around the country and they're not supporting that, I think that being held to account, and I think the journalists who work and the producers who work at the BBC would agree with me in that and say, but the leadership of the BBC and government and the policy regulation, all that kind of stuff, is letting people down. Now, I can say that because I'm a bit more, I can be a bit more forthright about that. You're researching this and you've had to be a bit more balanced about it and look at those kind of claims.
No. It's not about me. I mean, I say what I say because I've been a journalist for a long time, and also, I mean, I am a researcher, but I'm not like a fresh student, so a newbie or something. I think my view is that the BBC cannot be community media. So there will still be a gap, there will still be a space where local media can be that trusted source where people can go to if something is happening in the city. Why it's not happening? It used to be Leicester Mercury. I recently met Nick Carter, who was the editor of Leicester Mercury for a very long time and a very successful editor. And he's really fascinating things that he told me, that how he was doing things, and he created this sounding board of different city kind of where different community leaders, faith leaders, members of police, member of local government, civil society, other media, BBC, everybody would come and just, you know, to chat about what is happening in your community, what is happening. And it was such a useful forum for everybody. And I challenged him and I asked him that, why would you do that? You were not a politician. You were just an editor. So it was not your job to create a sounding board or to engage in that kind of activity. And he told me it was purely for business purposes. It was purely for audiences. We wanted to understand our audiences. We wanted to know what was happening in the community. So it was one of the, you know, strategies or sources that we used to be informed about our communities. And I thought it was really wonderful. But now that kind of things are, you know, those kinds of things are not happening anymore. So everybody is living in their bubbles. And there is a professor Ted Cantle, you know, parallel lives. And I would say there are also parallel medias.
Yeah.
So people are having their parallel medias. The challenge is how you bring them back to make them interested in place-based media based on civic identity.
And that was one of the interesting things in the SOAS report, was about the opening up of secular spaces, where you've got the opportunity. We heard, we were at an event earlier today, and we heard a colleague, who Kieran, who runs Leicester She Cares, told us, or told me that in an area of the city, Belgrave, that he's been visiting regularly, is there's only one community youth-based community event for young people. One. in that whole area. The rest of it is organised through temples and mosques, and it's so they're faith based, but there's no secular spaces because the funding for these things and the austerity measures that have come in. You know, the context is that these things have kind of been taken away, but we're not investing in that intercultural, collaborative kind of engagement that is actually supported for the long term, because it takes a lot to put these things together and run them and manage them and provide the resources and facilities and space for them.
So the gap was created by the cuts from the council. So the money was going away from all social cohesion or youth engagement activities. So, you know, it went on for some time until there were no cuts to be made. And then that gap was filled by religious organizations. So then, you know, of course, anything like Leicester 2022 unrest, it makes sense that you can see why it happened. I mean, it can be one of the factors. And I think we touched upon all these issues in our recent workshop that we did with community media leaders. And I think it was a good way to start a conversation after this SWAS-led report, so to talk about solutions, that how can you kind of come up with strategies. Of course, resources are needed, but what also needs to be done to make people interested, to bring them back?
One of the challenges that I've always faced, and I am very happy to accept that it might be me and my temperament, but it's when we go to an event and you meet people, and people are very, you know, nice to see you, and it's getting people to come on and record a podcast, you know, and discuss these things in an open manner where you can capture the thoughts and then other people can listen into that conversation and bring their thoughts, and then we can do another podcast or a radio program. And that's the benefit for me. It's like the open deliberation in a responsible way, you know, not highlighting any one particular problem or issue, or, you know, kind of apportion and blame onto any particular sector, that there's a whole set of processes that lead into this. And there's a hesitancy there, though, for people to kind of want to come in and have a discussion. Is there any reflections about how we, you know, for my advice to me, how do we get over that? Because I struggle with it.
So you see, and I find it really fascinating, because I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I mean, where I come from Pakistan. You would go and people, you know, even sitting on, you know, outside shops, like sometimes people are just, you know, just wandering around and they're not doing nothing and they are like, they are not very educated or something. But if you would give them a mic and you try to talk to them, they would always, you know, be kind of so into, you know, talking to you, and they would share their thoughts about politics and geopolitics and everything. So I don't know if it's a cultural thing or
it's really strange. I've always said, you know, kind of you can learn a lot from anything that's based around the UNESCO model of community media, you know, the participatory self-involvement, self-representation, all of those things. And it's kind of, we don't apply it in the UK, or we're not very confident. And there's a hesitancy and reluctance for people to share their thoughts.
And it's a country. So in my country, of course, if you say something wrong, you can get into trouble. I mean, and the trouble is like somebody can come and pick you up and then you will just disappear. It's a worst form scenario.
So as in inverted commas, an outsider,
yeah,
what's your reaction to that? Is this a real phenomenon, or is it me, you know, is it me, my imagination going, am I paranoid, or is this something that is actually there? Is this a real thing, that hesitancy to speak unless you're invited, or unless you're the CEO being invited to discuss a project that you're working on, or an event, and you get onto BBC Leicester and you just give the marketing talking points. But this whole, I mean, the podcasting field has really kind of exploded in the last few years. And I'm a massive fan of podcasts. But you know, we don't do this discursive discussion encourage. I love the bit in a podcast and a conversation like this when somebody says, however, have you thought about it? And you're world just turns upside down because there's a different perspective with this. And listening to podcasts, they're the podcasts I like to listen to, radio programs that do that are, you know, there's some incredible presenters, and the BBC still employs some incredible people who can do that, and it's wonderful to get drawn into that discussion. But ordinary people, or, you know, kind of the you know, the people who run small organisations, the middle class, the civic society people, it's like, I'll come on, and then you get cancelled or something, and it's like, I don't know how to, you know, resolve that.
They don't want to say something because they feel that there would be repercussions. I mean, it's a country where freedom of speech is ensured and respected. I don't think that if you will express your thoughts or opinions,
it's like a self-editing.
Anybody would come after you because of your opinions. So why is that, if the people feel hesitant, or they feel that they are not competent enough?
And part of it can be explained by the toxicity of the way that the clickbait style corporate media, you know, you get an article in the Leicester Mercury and you read the comments underneath, and it's like you can understand why people would be reluctant to dip their toe into that domain. Because it can be, you know, and if you're on social media and you get caught in a firestorm of, you know, whatever, you know, just for having an opinion,
or they feel that Rob will ask very difficult questions.
Well, that's my job. That's what I like. I enjoy that. You know, since I'm drawn to it, you know, and if we don't ask interesting questions,
yeah,
you know, that's, you know, that must drive you as a journalist. I mean, what kept you going from story to story?
Well, sometimes people get intimidated if they feel that, you know, the person interviewing them is too knowledgeable, or they feel that maybe they are probably not competent enough, or sometimes they feel that.
So this is again the literacy, is the experience of doing it and building up your experience. Yes. So it's like you have to learn to drive, and you have to become confident as you're driving, and you get your independence as you go through. The same with our media. You know, it's like start, and I always say, you know, if you're not happy with the representation that you see on whichever channel and whichever platforms that you're on, you what's changed in the world is that you can start your own platform now. You can start, you know, certainly in the UK, we've got our mobile phones, we've got our data, we've got YouTube, we've got, you know, numerous social media platforms where you can put very simple content out without having to worry about the production values, without having to go through a committee for approval. The key thing that we, when we do training for volunteers in community radio, it's really about trust. Is the content clean, you know, is it, you know, suitable for adults, or, you know, is it unsuitable for children? That's usually what we're asking. And then we're asking, is it fair? And is it, you know, is it, can we defend it if somebody says, you know, you've singled us out and what we're saying wasn't true, you know? And so it's that simple rule of thumb of just, how would you account for this in front of a group of friends? But trying to bring people into that middle ground, that civic space, to have these conversations, I think that's the, we've got to do a lot of thinking about how we actually do that in practice now. So
yeah, so we keep criticizing social media, but then social media also sometimes it is very helpful. And I found you on social media when I was thinking about and planning to do my placement in Leicester. And I found you on LinkedIn, and then I got in touch with you. So first of all, I also, you know, want to thank you for trusting me and giving me the opportunity to come here and work with you. And I remember that you immediately responded, and then we had an online call, and you said, okay, fine. You also wanted to contribute. I mean, it aligns with Decentered Media's mission and vision, and that you want to be part of, you know, research which is being done to improve media landscape and environment in the UK and around the world. But how has been your experience with me? And when I was coming to Leicester, you know, what kind of perception of thoughts you had in mind? And now when I'm going back to Leeds
But you'll be missed. It's been great. I mean, I've really enjoyed it. And the work that you do is thought provoking. And that's high praise from me. We were saying earlier about the British don't do praise, so we don't accept it, we don't give it. And it was all right. Yeah, you're fine. That's about the level of that high praise. But it is, because I think it's a good friend John Costa says, one of his famous phrases is, you're never a prophet in your own land. And it feels a little bit like by that, kind of we've been going around in circles a little bit, and then it just takes an external independent person to come along and go, oh my God, oh my goodness, this is what's going on here. And you kind of look at it and you go, oh, so it wasn't me, it's the kind of context. So that's incredibly useful, and not to take that for granted, because I think the danger is that you create your own echo chamber and your bubble. But we have I think what I really enjoy is I've learned so much from you, from your experience, but you also don't put up with a lot of that. You're very polite and you have a good way of pushing back against some of the things that I say. And because I can come out, I'm thinking things through. And that's often, dangerous territory where you kind of go, does this make sense? And then you go, and you engage with that, and that draws out a good level of thinking. And I think that's been very useful for me. So I've benefited a lot from that.
So last Wednesday when we did our workshop with community media leaders, at the end of the workshop, you asked Sam, our another colleague, and how was it? And he said, it was all right. And I was listening and I said, just all right? Yes. This is what you tell people? Yeah, then they ask you, how was it? Yeah, yeah, I said, what should I have said to you? Wonderful. It was great. It was amazing.
Oh, we don't do that. We don't do that.
And he blushed.
Yeah, that's how to catch. If you want to catch a Brit out, then that's how you know somebody's British.
We do it that.
Yeah, yeah. Offer them some praise, and you'll see them run in the opposite direction. It's like, we're not Americans, or Australians. Very different.
He quickly, blushed when I was just, kidding.
But I really enjoyed that evening. I mean, despite the fact that we bought far too many samosas for it, but it was it was good to be able to. And I think the question, one of the things that I remembered from that, it kind of stays with me, because you started off in the presentation talking about the public sphere and about the marketplace and the whole model of kind of, and then it was the question of kind of, look, we've been doing this for thousands of years. Have we not figured out the answers yet? And they say, when you're talking to people and the defeatism comes in and the expectations that, this dealing with this social media is really difficult and dealing with the international media. No, it's not. It's just the same as having a couple of cranks come into the marketplace and start spouting bile or whatever it is. There's mechanisms that we keep drawing on that bring it back to a common ground. It's like, there's ways that it's worked in the past that we just have to maybe revisit those things and go, we can calm ourselves down. Yes, the technology is different. Yes, the platform. Yes, the scale is different. The globalized scale of it is different. But the human principles are by and large the same.
Yes. So the challenge is how you bring people back to one single public sphere.
So my last question for you, because we should wrap up soon, I think, is how do you feel now?
Well, I think I'm still at the stage where, it's still, tomorrow is the last day and it's all booked. And I'm still kind of doing new things, meeting new people, new conversations. I think when I go back after a couple of days, things would start, sinking in. I've been taking loads of notes and memos, writing memos and everything. But I think I've done a lot in the last 11 weeks.
Yeah.
And when I go back, I read about Leicester a lot. I mean, I've been engaged with this topic since the unrest happened in 2022, about demography, about geography, about history, about economy, what happened in the 2022. I mean, even before the Suez report came, I knew everything. There was nothing that I was really shocked about that I did not know of. And some of those things I had been discussing with you as well before the report came. But it was still an outsider view. Now I living here, and I made that choice very thoughtfully that I should live here. It's not that I come and go and come and go. And I have made like really good connections and try to be for a very little time part of the social fabric, social life of Leicester. I think I still am not at that stage because I'm still in the pot or in the process. When I go back, and I think after a few days, then the process will start where I can tell the difference. But it's going to be a very different view of Leicester. I felt Leicester embraced me, and I felt at home. I felt very comfortable. I did not for a second felt, you know, so when I came, so people said, you know, there are communities and they do not go to, you know, certain areas. I've been to all different areas. I've been traveling through bus. I've been walking around the city. I never, ever felt unsafe.
And at some point you have to step back from that and kind of go, my personal feelings, I've got to objectify this as well. The one thing I would say, which is kind of, when I did my PhD research, his transcription was manual. So all the recordings I did, it's like it took months and months and months. Whereas now your recordings that you've taken, you can automate the transcription pretty much. So you've got, you'll be able to then probe into that in a bit of a deeper way. But
although we can't use all kind of softwares. No, they're very limited we can use, but there is an option. Yeah, yes.
Transcription services, yes. I'd say it's a must these days. You can't spend 3 months doing half an hour's worth of audio recording transcription. That's beyond anybody these days. But no, I mean, from that point of view of kind of that reflection, yes, I'd look, you know, it's when I look back on the research I did, it actually is, you value it, and over time you kind of realise that it was... You've experienced something that's unique, you know, and you have to be involved. And it's always a principle, you know, I encourage more people to do this kind of participant observation or ethnographic research.
Well, some people have been also telling me why you have selected this topic.
Well, you could PhD, simply look at it from a desk.
They said your PhD research could have been easier. Nobody is going to be happy. It's a very difficult and complicated topic. And
but
said,
you have
okay.
to meet with people. Yeah. You can't do it theoretically.
It is what it is.
Yeah,
yes.
And that drives it. So okay, so we're going to look forward to revisiting this topic in future. We may be doing a few months' time, we'll do an online chat. If you don't come back to Leicester before then,
I'll come back.
You do, and you visit, fleeting visits. So
yes.
There'll be a lot to follow on with, I think. You think you're going to kind of maybe have a list of things that you need to add. But it's been great having you here, and I've very much enjoyed it. It's given me a spur of a kind of a bit of affirmation, which is useful. So that's good. So. If you want to get in contact with Decentred Media, Rob, contact us at Decentred Media on the social media platforms, and the website is decentred.co.uk. If you want to support Decentred Media, we have a Patreon account, which we use as well to support some of the other projects that we work on, such as Radio Lear, which is the arts-based community radio station that we're developing and establishing. And it might pay for some samosas at another event that we do in the future. So it's always welcome. So until next time, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Decentred Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. To find out more, go to decentred.co.uk or follow on Twitter and Instagram at decentredmedia.com.